Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
So the issue of sediments, we've talked about that we're probably at some level of equilibrium. We said there'd probably be, you know, some level of movement of sediment, particularly where the powerhouse is going to be. In you know, some of the discussions, one of the thoughts is, okay, we know that there have been PCBs in here, so we want to verify. So we would do, you know, one of the things I think that's obvious is do a test of the sediments that might be disposed of, see if there's toxic issues associated with that. Other than that, we think there's a lot of data that DEQ has collected over time, and we recognize that we have to do that application. The Liberty University has to do the application, but we didn't really see any other, you know, issues or need for further study. But I guess it gets back to you, Brian, particularly, and maybe Scott and George, you know, your thoughts on whether there's any other study request that you think is appropriate for water quality.
A couple things I guess I learned today. It was helpful for me to go to the site visit. That if the water level is raised in the project, like you had the 3 foot of boards, the question comes up, would wetlands be affected? You know, in the pool above. Where there's wetlands now, would they become flooded? So that's something we want to look at if we chose to do that.
Right. And Ben, can you address that? Because yeah, we'll be dealing with that. But Ben is our wetlands person.
Yeah, exactly. At present, about a third of the island upstream of the dam is confirmed as jurisdictional wetlands by the Corps within the last 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So upstream of the dam, if you're facing downstream, maybe I shouldn't say that, but if you're facing downstream, there's a channel along the right side of the river. That right-hand side of that island is relatively high, 15, 20 feet. The center portion of that island is strangely scooped out, whether that's man-made, the result of man-made activity or just scour and erosion. But it's relatively low gradient, to the point that it's like a 10-to-1 slope into the water on the broader side of the river, what would be a river left. 3 feet of elevation would, at, you know, 10-to-1, that's about 30 feet back onto that portion of the island that would be impounded. Mm-hmm. At present, it's forested. It's forested with scrub vegetation. Some of that vegetation could survive inundation, some of it could not. So it would be a wetland conversion in all likelihood. The wetlands can be up to about 6 feet deep, so it could still meet the definition of a wetland, jurisdictional wetland, but it would have a very different hydrologic regime. Mm-hmm. So that would be something to discuss with the agencies.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff would be what you put in the application to us, as well as the license application. So is that island, is that turned into an island by making the canal in 1820 or whenever they?
I don't know.
No, it's natural.
I don't think it's
a natural island.
Okay.
Because there's some that look identical to it as you go up river. But,
Okay.
Most likely for the same way.
Yeah, we'll cover wetlands in there, but that's clearly an area of study where we'll have to look at, okay, if we do raise it 3 feet, I mean, right now, we're probably not raising that water level any more than what's out there today at the high flows, because that I'm sure there's 3 feet or more above that dam crest today. I didn't want to stand on it, but I'm pretty sure.
So the other thing that thought of, and I don't know how big a deal this is, and I guess rely on you guys about this, would be if water that currently goes over the dam without the power plant is diverted through the power plant more often,
mm-hmm.
so that what you end up with is less water over the straight part of the dam, then there's a stretch of the river that gets less water.
Right.
And does that have a bad impact on habitat downstream until it all meets again?
Exactly. And when you see the slide on fisheries, you'll see that we flag both the piece upstream and the piece downstream that we want to look at. Because I've worked with Scott enough to know that he would ask that same question. So, any other?
No, that's all I got.
Okay. So, what do you mean, like in terms of like if spill was reduced or with a straight stretch and effort?
Yeah, safely create a bypass.
Yeah.
Even though there's water there, it's not flowing.
And so one potential thing, just an example, Jody. Let's say that there between where the powerhouse is, there isn't much flow going from the end of the island and the upstream part of the dam, and so that piece doesn't get much flow in there. So it'd be like a stagnating area. Water temperatures could go up high. Dissolved oxygen could decrease. So those are the things that we want to look at. Think it through. I mean, it's the whole process is just make sure you identified all the issues and you go through a rational process to assess them. And is there an effect? If there is, what can you do about it? If there isn't, okay, then you've at least documented that you thought it through. Okay.
You can control the flow with your flashboards, though, can't you? Are they adjustable or?
Well, it depends. If you use the wooden flashboards that Mark and I were thinking about, they're designed to fail at a certain flow, so then you put them back up when the flow goes down. This is a maintenance. But there's the possibility that you could put an Obermeyer Weir in there. An Obermeyer Weir is kind of this inflatable rubber dam that you can adjust the height of. Okay, and so you could do water through with that as well. So let's talk about fishery resources. I think we'll spend a fair amount of time on this issue. The rest of it will probably go pretty quickly. We have a fair amount of information on this. There's a lot of warm water species, non-game fish. I didn't put all the different species, but smallmouth bass is the probably the. Are we losing you, Larry? Thank you for coming by. Hopefully you got something out of it here.
Thank you.
Take care. I don't know if I offended him or not. Hopefully not. Anyways, warm water fisheries. I was looking for the money commitment from him just coming right up. but bass, muskie, catfish, spotted bass, largemouth bass are all fish for, but smallmouth bass most. There's a movement, and I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, are aware that they're trying to restore diatomous fisheries to the James River. They breached Bossier's Dam a number of years ago. I don't know how many fish make it upstream. I know not many make it upstream Bossier's Dam, but there is a goal, and there are American shad, alewife, blueback herring, striped bass, lampreyed, American eel that are in the system, and there's a goal to expand that. And we'll talk a little bit about the ideas on that in a minute. As far as American, I don't think any of these fish, except for American eel, gets upstream of Scotts Mill. Dominion Generation did a study, and they worked with Scott, but they have documented a few eel upstream as far as Coushaw Dam. So we know they're getting up. We got a lot of good information from Game and Inland Fisheries, and we put a summary of that in the pad. There has been some disease in the river, but maybe, Scott, we didn't see any recent stuff in there. Are we getting better, or is that just happenstance?
No, because we don't know what caused it.
Okay. So, but there's my expert on that. And we also do know that there's a fair amount of angling pressure in the system. So armed with that as the background, I keep doing this thing the wrong way. There we go. All right, I got to think for a minute. Pull it towards me. Okay, so what are our issues? Fish passage. I think there's a commitment to look at fish passage, and the thought that the LU had was to do a trap and haul program. There are seven dams. And I don't know how many are familiar with American shad restoration and other river systems, but I'll tell you from my firsthand experience on a couple of them on the East Coast here, and I'll use the Susquehanna River, we had a very successful program of trapping and hauling on the Susquehanna River. And then they put in fish lifts, fish ladders, whatever you want to call them, spent a lot of money, and we're not as successful because it's taking too much time. And so our thought was to work with all of the dam owners and you know, the state and the Fish and Wildlife Service, who couldn't be here today, David Southern and I have been talking about, that's their goal, and they also identified not just American shad, but blueback herring and the anadromous fish, when we get to a certain point to move them upstream. And I think that's a commitment that LU has, as they would work with the others. We need to look at, you know, a study that identifies a little bit more detail what would be needed, you know, for fish passage. But I think the idea would be some kind of trap and haul. Probably want to work with you and Fish and Wildlife Service. What are the triggers for that happening? Is it, you know, 500 American shad? What is it? And what's the timetable for that? And
500 American shad? You're going to be waiting for a while.
Well, maybe so, but I don't know where we are. But this is something that's very important to a lot of people, and so we want to lay out something that's well thought out.
Right.
We'll capitalize on where the program is, and then we'll look at, okay, we'll take it. Okay, what do we do? How can we get them to that next step? And maybe you're right. Maybe it's waiting for some, you know, some period of time. But we want to put the infrastructure in place to make it happen. Okay, and that's part of what we're doing.
And the it is to get them all the way above Coosaw, or just
yes,
above the dam?
Okay. Above Coosaw. Yeah, it makes no sense. Just there's 22 miles, and you got 7 dams in 22 miles. There's probably not a whole lot, but when you get upstream of Coosaw, the whole world opens up again. Okay, so it's a really good deal for you get them. Now, getting them back downstream, you know, and that's where Eric comes in here, when you look at the system that they have, because part two of that is the impingement and the entrainments and, you know, the mortalities. On the typical, you know, turbine, you have the stationary outside, right? And then you have the turbines going around like this, and they're spaced, and the fish has got to go through. And if you're lucky enough, you might, you know, survive. If you're small, you're good. If you're 3 feet long, your chances of survival are pretty low. But you know, it's interesting. We did a study I've been involved with a number of studies on entrainment, and when you get some small fish, American shad, coming downstream, there's a pretty high degree of survival even with those. But what we're trying to do is, with this new system, look at maybe even a higher, you know, survival. And I think, you know, do you have data yet on that? Because I know you're doing some work on that. Can you talk about what you're doing there for a second, if you don't mind, Eric?
As we were talking about a little while ago. This turbine has no pressure drop across the blades because it's an impulse turbine. Pressure drop is the main source of mortality for small fish. And so since there's no pressure drop across the blades, that source of mortality is eliminated. And then in your typical turbine, your capital turbine or so on, the blades are going many times the speed of the water. So there's a water speed going through the whole system. The blades are spinning very fast compared to that. And the impact energy goes up with the cube of the speed of impact. And in our turbine, the blades are going at half the speed of the water. So another turbine is going much faster than water, and we're at half the speed of the water. So we've run lots of computer fish through our computer simulations, and they do very well. We haven't done any actual fish studies. The installation we have up in Oregon is in a canal where you're not allowed to introduce fish, but we will be putting sensor fish through in a project in study in coordination with I'll remember the name of the lab. But one of the national
Alden Lab.
Yeah, sorry about that. Alden Lab. So they have a little sensor fish. It's basically the size of a magic marker, you know, for a whiteboard or so, and it takes a lot of data as it goes through about impacts and pressures and velocities and attachment and plug them in. And then as soon as we have an installation in place, like probably one of our main sites, where we're doing actual fish studies. But the computer simulations are very good, and that's part of our design philosophy.
So we'll develop like a you know, some study plan, for lack of a better word, to address this issue of how we're going to be, you know, evaluating it. So you can, you know, look at that. There are you know, for the traditional, you know, turbines, there are some standard equations to calculate your mortality looking at the type of